You're listening to a podcast of The View, brought to you by the Church of the Larger Fellowship. To find other episodes of The View and to subscribe to this podcast, visit questformeaning.org/VUU.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of The View. I'm excited today to say that we're joined by Jennifer Heyman, who is the Director of Music and Arts at All Souls Church in Washington, D.C., a church that many of us love to visit and go to precisely, well, not exclusively, Rob Hardy's. We love your preaching, too. But really, the music there, people talk about all the time. And so we're really excited to be delving into what makes such a lively music program and to hear more about the other arts. So I'm Meg Riley. Right now I'm in Boston, Massachusetts at 24 Farnsworth Street, where we had a CLF meet and greet last night that was really fun. And I'll be here just for another day and then heading back to Minneapolis to quickly get in all my green tomatoes before it frosts this weekend. How are you doing, Hank?
I'm doing fine, and you make me, whenever you say, like, music and the arts, I just think, like, music and martial arts. They're like, breaking boards. Rob Hardy's is, like, you know, doing all kinds of crazy stuff, you know, grabbing arrows out of midair, you know. He's amazing. I'm doing fine. It's a lovely day here in eastern Massachusetts, and back from I did a funeral for a good friend last weekend down in D.C., so I'm still a little heart-heavy from that, but we can talk about a bit more about that later on. But
let's get back to that.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, one of us is sitting outside on a deck today, it looks like, Patrice Curris.
Yes, I am. Hi, everybody. I'm here in western Florida, looking out at the Gulf of Mexico. Weather's nice. This week was just incredibly busy. It feels like, you know, the holidays are almost here is what it feels like, even though it's 6 weeks away. So it's getting kind of intense.
Which holiday are we talking about? Arbor Day or what are we?
Oh, you know.
Which holiday?
Thanksgiving, believe it or not. I mean, it just feels like it's going to be here in the blink of an eye, and then
rookie.
Well, you know, I think part of the thing is I have to say, it was the end of September, and I saw my first set of Halloween lights. I'm sorry, yes, Halloween lights that kind of look like Christmas lights, except they were orange. And now, I don't know about you guys, but I've been seeing stuff for Christmas in the stores forever. It's kind of disgusting, to be honest.
I think Florida whacks people's sense of weather out so much that they don't know what season it is, you know? They're just like, summer, it all feels the same. Maybe it's Christmas. Kind of like Florida, you know when it's Christmas. Dark all day, it's freezing.
Right.
You know it's Christmas.
Yeah, I don't know. It's kind of a new one for me for it to be quite this early. Now, there's not a lot of Christmas stuff, I have to admit. But there's been a lot of Halloween stuff since about the middle of September.
So. Yeah. Halloween is the second most, people spend the second most money on Halloween as Christmas of any other holiday.
Wow. I had no idea.
And there are these people who are the Halloween people, right? My sister's one of them. Her whole house, her yard, I mean, it is their holiday. And they're not zombies or anything. That's just what they do. So, Patrice, how does your bird like it there in Florida?
What, the birds?
Your bird, Tweety. Wait, what's your bird?
Oh, he died.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Oh.
He died actually while I was serving with Jen at All Souls. It was very sad.
For those who don't know, when Patrice was a fellow at CLF, the bird...
Thanks, Meg.
I know.
Thanks, Meg.
We were going to get back to death, so we'll talk about death.
Awkward.
Moving on. You made it wrong. I'm so sorry. You loved that.
Yeah, it's just very sad. We miss him. So we left him in California.
Well, see, that's what I was wondering, is how do you move a bird? Now I know. You didn't. So, okay, that was awkward.
He would have been very happy, too. And he would have been very happy here.
Yeah. Bob, how are you?
I'm great. It's a beautiful day in Buffalo, New York. I'm not sitting outside, though. There's no palm tree reflecting off my window. And I'm really, I lived in Washington, D.C. for 7 years or so, and a big chunk of that I was a member of All Souls D.C., and I would marinate in the fantastic music, except for those years, the year that I was teaching RE. I taught preschool RE, which meant I was in the basement with the toddlers, not hearing the music. But it's such a great vibe. I'm so excited to hear how the magic gets made.
That's very cool. But before we get to the magic and Jennifer, let's go back to death. I mean, I brought it up. Let's just, Hank, you're a Scorpio too, aren't you?
Yes.
Wallow in this for a while. No, seriously, you did the eulogy for a good friend? Is that what you did?
I had a good friend who died a couple of weeks ago down in D.C. And so I flew down there and, and it was a little tough. There was a divorce, so it was trying to navigate between his immediate family, his ex-wife and their children, and his brothers, and friends, and it's there's a lot of emotional weight that goes into that, and it is a strange thing. I certainly understand when people sort of say don't perform your child's wedding and don't do your friend's funerals, those sort of things. And yet at the same time, I also sort of felt I'm the one to do this. It is a strange thing. It's sort of my larger ministry is to I married most of my friends. I performed their weddings and some child dedications and christenings and
these are mostly
number of funerals.
You don't do church, right? This is your old music scene, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Someone you knew from your punk days, is that right?
Well, yeah, and through college, but yeah, mostly through band stuff, and then we were roommates for a few years, and I think the other thing too is that his life was going great, and as he lived outside of New England, and as is so often the case for all of us, that you sort of feel. There's some friends you sort of feel I don't have to worry about them. I can go on in my life and check in at Christmas and a couple times during the year and Facebook, that sort of stuff. And everything's, you don't have to worry about them until you do, And it is tough. It is, and it is a heavy thing to do and not to, and still be present to be, authentically who you are, and being sad, but at the same time not letting it get away from you in the service. So it is definitely one of those things too.
Not emote, but that thing that the minister is supposed to hold the space for other people's emotions. Not the eulogy, but I wrote a Huffington Post blog after a friend committed suicide, and her mother loved it so much that she asked me to read it at the memorial. But I didn't want to just read it, so I wrote something else about the time in my life when I had really known her, which was 20 years before she committed suicide, right? But
yeah.
It was a snapshot of a time when many people in the room had known her because she'd gotten increasingly isolated. And what was hard for me was that there wasn't a eulogy. And that what I wrote was listed as eulogy in the order of service. And I would have taken it so seriously, I would have interviewed. I talked nothing about her family, because I just talked about this time in the 80s when we all hung out. And I was like, and I said to the minister, I'm not doing a eulogy. You shouldn't have called it a eulogy. He said, don't worry, I'll pick up everything you don't say. Well, he just talked about Jesus. I was so mad by the end. I mean, her parents just sat there without a word of acknowledgement, but they didn't really seem to care. A suicide, everybody's so upset anyway that they were just glad to hear about a really happy time in her life, honestly. So, it was hard. It was not something I would have volunteered to do, frankly.
And there is also that that fear of having someone else do it. I mean, it's always like the busman's holiday of kind of like, there's nothing worse than going to a worship, any sort of like religious event, and you kind of think, oh crap, I should have done this.
Oh, I was furious about what he called his eulogy. but nobody else was. You know, I was like saying to my friends, like, that wasn't eulogy, and they were like, it was fine. What do you mean?
It's funny.
You have these things about you tell their like story. You interview people. You dig in deep. Nobody else walked in with all that. They weren't ministers, you know.
No, exactly right.
Even,
you
even
like,
as a
did
seminarian,
the devil?
I'm so sensitized. Even as a seminarian, I'm so sensitized to judge worship when I go there. Really, it's very hard to just sit and be. I mean, Jen, you must run into that too. I mean, it's just hard to sit and do the service.
With music almost everywhere. I'm constantly thinking about that. But you know, same kind of thing. You know, you feel like every wedding, you know, every friend that gets married wants you to do the music, and so you have to pick and choose. Am I going to be too emotionally vulnerable? Am I going to be able to be in the spirit of what is going on without losing myself in it? And I think that's, you know, well, that's actually a big challenge at All Souls almost every Sunday, actually. Yeah.
Well, Jen, I'm so glad you joined the conversation. So you've been 3 years at All Souls. That's
right.
What were you doing before that? Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I've come to this work by a very circuitous route, but most recently before working at All Souls full-time, I was working part-time as the music director at the Philly UU Church right in downtown Philadelphia. During that same time, I was also working as assistant director for a Baroque orchestra in Philadelphia. So I did a lot of work in arts administration that I think has kind of been part of what I've carried over into some of my work that goes on behind the scenes at All Souls on Sunday morning, you know, part of running our concert series and finding ways to sort of market some of the things that we do. It's kind of inherent from that time working there. But before that, I was interested in what Hank said about his punk rock days. I worked in the music industry for about 5 years before I went back and got my master's, and worked as a tour manager for a rock band on the Warped Tour and worked for a record label. And so it's been kind of a...
Which one?
It was a band called Thursday, and they were the headliner for the Warped Tour. But I got to meet The Cure and a lot of other fun bands that I idolized in my youth. So it was a really exciting time. But yeah, I think it's kind of this big bag of tricks that you accumulate over time that helps kind of inform everything that we bring at All Souls. You know, it's definitely informed some of the pop music and the rock music that we do. So it's just interesting to see how everything in your life, you know, you accumulate this big bag of tricks, and then you hope that you can find other ways to use it.
So wait, before we go any
go
further, I want to ask Jen, I saw your fingernails as you were talking a moment, they're painted red. I know that was the color of your clogs of your wedding, which just happened.
This is the first time these tiny nails have been painted in my entire life.
Wow. So tell us about, you said something about, so how'd your wedding go? And how did you choose the music, or who chose the music, and who played? And...
Well, my wedding was, Patrice is giving away my big secret, which was that I got married this past Saturday.
Woo-hoo!
And I think she's, you know,
and you're talking to us? Why are you talking to us? Thank you.
I like you all so much. I needed a break from my wedding. The wedding was wonderful.
First honeymoon ever.
Yeah. So you have to go easy on me because I'm still in blissful bride brain. So anyway, the wedding was absolutely wonderful. Actually, two of our regular musicians, one who's a section leader and also she's just a beloved singer and member of our choir. She also leads our jazz Sundays, Rochelle Rice. She and her partner in crime, Mark Meadows, they did a lot of the accompanied music for the service. But in addition, I had friends from all over the country from various choirs that I've led or sung with who were at the wedding who came and sang one piece together. They had a, you know, a trial by fire 30-minute rehearsal, and there were almost 60 singers. So it was so beautiful to see this group of people come together. You know, someone said it was like herding cats, but, you know, we all feel that way as directors sometimes. So it was great that they came together for our big day. It was really wonderful.
I have to tell you, if there were 60 people in the choir, you failed at a secret wedding, just for the record.
No, it wasn't a secret at all. It was all over her Facebook page.
I think I saw
all kinds of pictures, selfies.
notice your own happiness, right? Like Kurt Vonnegut says, notice your own happiness. So I wanted to share that happiness with everybody.
Absolutely. Well, now, can you tell us, I have never understood, and I lived in D.C. for 10 years and was part of All Souls Congregation before you got there. The music, it seems really complicated there. There are different choirs, there's an organist, there's a pianist. Can you just kind of describe, I mean, we'll all just drool over it in envy, but just describe the music overarching and you're directing all of it, or just how does it all work?
Okay, well, that's a good complicated question. I mean, first of all, I guess I would say the things that you're talking about, all of these complicated parts, I call them each blessings because they really are. They make my job so easy. So my job is to basically oversee the entire program, and within that, I also direct the All Souls Choir. The All Souls Choir performs two Sundays a month. There are about 65 members of that choir. We often perform with an organist who happens to be one of the former directors of All Souls, same my role now, John Strang. He's still there. Wait, so wonderful.
And do they robe? Does the choir robe?
No, we're very low-key about robing. I actually really like that we look just like the rest of the congregation, other than we wear solid color shirts and black color pants, but I want people to feel like we're all part of this together, so that's kind of a big platform for me as we've gone forward. But yeah, so I lead the All Souls Choir and the Children's Choir, and then Leonard Starks, my colleague, leads the Jubilee Singers, and they're primarily a gospel choir. They sing one Sunday a month. They're fabulous. And then we, since I've come on, we've also added a West African drumming ensemble that's led by Kristen Arant and a Ghanaian citizen, Kweko Owusu, her husband, actually. They lead this drumming group together, which has been another opportunity for people to be part of the music ministry who don't identify as a singer. You know, there's still some singing, but I think more, you know, an emphasis on some other kind of physicality. And it's been great because that's a really intergenerational group, really diverse in a lot of ways. And then we have our Jazz Sundays once a month where we have lots of guest musicians who come in from Howard. Last year we had the pleasure of having very well-famed pianist Cyrus Chestnut join us for a Sunday. So we've been really blessed that this is something that the church really celebrates and is willing to put some funding behind, because we're just able to continue to surprise and outdo ourselves, which is great.
I'm curious, what percentage of the church's budget goes to music? It seems higher than a lot of other churches. I mean, or is there endowment for music there, or how does all that work? And well, how many people are in the church? Let's just give people who don't know kind of a general framework of what we're talking about.
I think roughly on the books we have about 1,200 members now. And over, in the time that I've been there, we've been able to really grow the music program, which was a goal when I was hired with the position. We have almost 200 members who are active in the music program, which I know, I'm doing a dance in my seat right now as I say that. But no, truly, it's such a blessing. And you know, we also have tried to find more opportunities for our members and congregants to have occasional times when they perform. So, you know, we have our choirs that regularly perform, our drumming ensemble that regularly performs. But then two times a year, we have a bluegrass band. And, you know, recently we've also added a blues band, and they are absolutely amazing, totally, totally amazing. And it was just a surprise to know that we had all of these members in our congregation who are super well known throughout the city, and it was just a really untapped resource. You asked about our budget. I think, you know, it's still probably less than 10%, significantly less than 10%. But we're able to stretch that, and I think part of, you know, we offset some of our costs by having this concert series. We're also really fortunate that so many of our congregants want to come to special events. They want to give as much back and show their appreciation for the music program, which makes my job really fun.
And how do you juggle all that? I mean, I think that's one of the things too is being able, you know, there's certainly some folks who have, you know, I guess I'm thinking more sort of like when you started off, like how did you sort of say, okay, we have this choir and you guys sing this stuff, that's great, but we want to bring this stuff in. Do those folks get jealous? Do folks, you know, did the choir who are singing twice a month now, were they singing 3 or 4 times a month and all of a sudden they're being cut back and they're seeing some drummers come in and they're going like, hey, what's going on with, like, how did you handle all that change?
And can I add a friendly amend before that, which is how did you choose what styles, and then how did you deal with all the stuff that Hank's talking about? You know, how did you decide what styles to bring in to add to what was already happening?
Those are both fully loaded questions. Let me just say that one thing that, because the program is well known, so many of you have come and checked it out, and you know how near and dear it is to all of the members at All Souls. One thing that especially Reverend Hardy's has emphasized all along is that the quality must always be excellent. And of course, there are different interpretations of what excellent is. I think we try to think that excellent is something that moves the spirit, moves the heart, you know, makes people feel something. I think that that's a big part of what we try to emphasize on Sunday mornings. You know, we're bottled up most of the week, and so part of what we really love about Sunday mornings is this place to be free. And so, strangely enough, we've been fortunate that there hasn't been a lot of pushback or animosity as we sort of add new colors to the mix of what we do. I think it was amazing to me when we did an all bluegrass Sunday. Now, mind you, all of the bluegrass players are people who play in bluegrass bands out in the city and are really successful in their own right doing that, but don't identify as professional musicians. Most of them have other jobs. When we invited them in, you know, some of us wondered, oh, well, will this isolate some of our members? Is it too country? Is it this? Is it that? And we were surprised that so many people who were the biggest fans of Bluegrass Sundays were people who we would never expect that would be the style of music that they loved. And so I think that we're kind of trying to create this, or celebrate, I guess, this culture of abundance that, like, look at all of these talented resources we have within our congregation. Let's celebrate that. I think actually probably the choir, especially my choir that sings 2 Sundays a month, is happy for a little bit of a reprieve, because that's quite an ambitious schedule for people who have lives and jobs and things like that.
And it's two services every week?
2 services throughout the school year, so basically September through June till we go to GA. So, yeah. That's a big commitment on a Sunday morning for someone who plays in any or sings in any ensemble there.
And then when I was there, again, a while ago, there were always these amazing soloists. Are they paid? Are they part of the congregation? I just enjoyed it, but I never got into it to actually know what was going on. So now I feel like I get to go behind the scenes a little bit, 12 years later, right?
You're pulling back the veil, yeah. Some of our section leaders our choir has 4 section leaders. They are all paid, and again, they are not just there to provide solo opportunities, but also to be great mentors to the rest of our choirs. And you know, we have one of our soloists has sung at the Met. You know, one of them just won a Jazzy Award as Best Female Jazz Vocalist in the D.C. area. So we've got a really wide array of styles that are highlighted, of skills that are highlighted. And I think, you know, we're so blessed with this big congregation, and we just want to still provide almost an educational experience while sharing this gift with the community at large.
Well, one thing I've noticed is that, so you mentioned a blues band, and most of us, you know, a blues band and also a bluegrass band, and one thing that I noticed is that there are different styles, but one thing that runs through it is it's almost an opportunity to share wisdom from Christianity, because so many of the songs, especially I'm thinking bluegrass, if it's a sacred song, it's, you know, it's going to be, you know, mentioning God or going down to the river or some of the metaphors that come from the Bible. And what I loved is that because it's in music, I think people don't have that same sense of reaction that Unitarian Universalists can have to those types of metaphors, because it's just so beautiful. And there is, you know, incredible music from, you know, from Christianity. And you guys managed to pull it off, I think, in singing, right, in a way that if you were just always talking about it, preaching about it, or, you know, that it wouldn't go over so well. So I always thought that that was really cool, that you could bring that in through music.
You're right, and there is a sensitivity to that that I think we're lucky we get to sort of transcend that. You know, one thing that I've really tried to emphasize, and this is a thing I would emphasize to other music directors as they're trying to, you know, navigate their way with a congregation, provide as much context for why you're selecting a particular piece as you can. So often I think we're quick to adapt lyrics, we're quick to adapt to make the perspective more accessible and digestible to the UU voice. And sometimes I think it can be more powerful if you provide the context for where the piece came from, its origin, why you've selected it for a given day. For example, with our Bluegrass Sundays, we had the Bluegrass Band on an All Souls Sunday one day, meaning November 1st, All Souls Day. And we sang a piece that's probably from the Christian canon, Ain't No Grave Can Hold My Body Down. And it was so beautiful to talk about this idea, but it's also a song about resilience. It's also this idea that, you know, you can surmount, you know, even death with your faith. And so I think that, and you know, also on that same day, we did a Paul Simon song. We did I Know What I Know. We've done the Talking Heads on a day with Bluegrass Sunday. So there is like, you know, we try to push the boundaries of even what that category of music can be. And I think that's kind of, you know, that's taking it to that next level. It's really beautiful when we can do these things in the Christian canon. And I think you're right. It gives people maybe a closer association with pieces that they thought didn't apply to what they believed. Yeah.
You know, Meg, were you going to say something?
Go ahead, Bob.
Okay. Well, I mean, similarly, too, I think a common critique of Unitarian Universalist services is that they are highly intellectual and not embodied. And at All Souls DC, there was such a different vibe about that, about standing up and clapping. And I mean, I've seen liturgical dance there that worked, you know, which is like sort of liturgical dance is the punchline of so many, you know, arts and aesthetics type in church jokes. It's kind of cultural in a way. And I'd like to hear a little more about that. Also, I just want to ask, are you still doing Vespers?
We are still doing Vespers. It's a monthly offering. We're now in our fourth year of doing it. And it's truly a blessing. It's continued to grow and sustained. We actually just had Vespers last night.
Wow. I want to, a shout out is due to Abby Tennis, who I believe is the founder of that, and did a spectacular job. And in particular, you know, when I came back from Afghanistan, Vespers was a hugely healing place for me. And I can't tell you how meaningful that was for me.
Vespers is, I think it's our only lay-led service. And we now have, you know, about seven people who do the job of one Abby. So Abby, if you're listening, thank you for all your wisdom. But yes, we're still doing our Vespers service. And we've now incorporated more, we now do a lot of earth-based chants. We have added some Buddhist chants. We've added some things from the yogic tradition. So there is an even wider span of eclectic music that is offered in those services.
Awesome. So yeah, say more about the embodiment, and I would love to hear like how your conversations with Rob work on that too.
Oh yeah. Well, first of all, let me say every Sunday morning we start at All Souls. We ring a bell or a ting sha, and then the choirs process down the center aisle. And I think even just the idea that you are connected, it's not just a stage and congregation, you know, or audience and stage sort of setup, already makes a big difference in the interconnectedness of the people singing and the people who are listening. And another thing, every time when we come down that aisle, we do a piece that is really, there's no printed music. it's something that it's often either something from the African-American spiritual tradition or the Appalachian tradition, but it's always something that's kind of like, oh, there's that earworm that's always been in the back of my mind. And so people realize, oh, I know this song already. It's something I can sing along to. It's something that already is in me. And I think that that's a big part of feeling that connectedness right away. Another thing that, you know, Patrice can also speak to this, we are sort of fanatics about worship planning at All Souls. We spend one whole day, you know, every 6 weeks or so, where we plan out the next season of services. And we, something that I've tried to emphasize, and I think Reverend Rob also, we emphasize a lot, is that we want to find something in every service. We want one, at least one selection that feels like something that is familiar to you sitting in the congregation. And then something that is going to stretch your, what you think are your personal tastes. So maybe that's something that's a bit more of an artsy piece, or something that is more modern or angular, and then always something that feels like it's deeply tied to the sermon, it's deeply tied to the message of that day. And those are often the pieces that just really drive home that feel, that heart feeling that that I think maybe you're speaking to when you say that it's, you know, it's a very alive feeling congregation. When you come in, it's cacophonous, and it often doesn't let up from there, which, you know, that can be good and bad depending on how you feel about it. But, you know, I'll take that energy any day. It's a blessing to me.
Yeah. Now, and do you sing out of our hymnals? Are things projected? Like how are those handled? Because it sounds like there's all this great music that in some ways you want to go like, all right, you amateurs can shut up for a little bit. You know, I don't know.
Well, we actually stick pretty much to the gray hymnal, primarily because we have found at All Souls that a lot of those tunes are easier to sing. A lot of the tunes in the teal hymnal, we do sing them occasionally and often as choir pieces, because a lot of them are written in sort of more of that style, four-part harmony, a little more complicated. But we try, oftentimes, a lot of the tunes in the hymnal, once you know the first line, we can go off book. You know, glory, glory, hallelujah, for example. Once you know that first line of each verse, it's easy to put your hymnals down. I think that something that I've heard a lot of people say about All Souls is there is this vulnerability to a lot of what happens in worship. You know, to be able to put your book down and to stand up and to start clapping or to sing along or to come out into the aisle and start dancing, there's a vulnerability that we don't often possess in our other parts of our daily life, that I think it's kind of fun to celebrate that in a church community. And then you get to look at each other and say, oh, right, I was dancing with you last Sunday. It's another kind of connection. It's a big part of, we really emphasize that human connection, I think. It's something that is really valued, which is why, you know, we don't often tell people not to clap. We're not a sit on your hands kind of congregation. So, we stick a lot to we stick a lot to the gray hymnal, but then also oftentimes our benediction, or there's one other piece in the service where people feel like it's something they can join in or sing along to or clap along to. And so even if you are appreciating what is going on in the front, you can still feel like you're actively involved.
And are there some things that people sing every week? Like, do you sing like the doxology every week? Is there like a little closing song you sing every week, or a song you sing the kid? I mean, is there some song that's like there every week that everyone knows?
You'll be so surprised to discover what it is.
It's Spirit of Life. during our time of prayer every week, we sing Spirit of Life. Now, we occasionally mix it up. It can be done with organ, it can be done with piano, it can be done a cappella. We have this beautiful four-part arrangement of it. So that's one thing that we do every week. And then our list of processionals, which were the pieces I was talking about when we come down our center aisle, there's really only, you know, a rotation of about 12 of those, and a lot of them are songs people know, just like I said, in the American subconscious, Yonder Come Day, Down in the River to Pray, Wade in the Water, pieces like that.
I want to add, actually, Jen, sorry to jump in, but All Souls sings Spirit of Life twice, once in English and once in Spanish.
That's right.
A reflection of the neighborhood where the church sits too, which I think is a really powerful thing.
Right.
So, two things. One is that I noticed how many young adults really feel at home at All Souls. And to me, that's kind of about what you're talking about, with more risk, more vulnerability. That is what youth like in worship. That's kind of why a lot of youth and young adults are really bored in some forms of traditional worship, which are more about sitting back and observing. Do you deliberately do things thinking about age, or is that just an outgrowth of what you're doing?
Well, that's a great question. You're right. First of all, our young adult group is super active. They have their own sort of subgroup that does things on at least once a week basis. But so many of them are involved in the music program. So many of them support the RE program. Big leaders in our social justice group. So I think, first of all Souls tries to empower young leaders, which is great. And I think, in addition to that, you know, you're right. We try not to. I think that, and this has happened in some other arts organizations that I've worked for, we think that the younger generation needs constant stimulation, constant what's the next new technological thing, what's the new. And I think you know, one of the interesting things, and Bob, you'll probably think this is curious, we at our Vesper service, we have probably 60% of that group is young adults. People want a place where they can check out, where they can be quiet, where they can worship and not have all of the technological distractions. I think sometimes catering to that lowest common denominator is not what the youngest generation wants. We need that space, you know, to be quiet. And it's part of why I think all of the other directors in the music team and probably other teams at the church really emphasize that, you know, in every rehearsal we have just a moment of silent meditation, reflection, because otherwise, it's just one more thing you're doing every week. And so I think we try to really emphasize the spiritual and community element of that. And that's something I think people really are celebrating, and as we see even more growth in all of our programs from the young adults.
It's so powerful. So Jen, folks who go to smaller churches, which is almost every other UU church, will be wondering how they can take the spirit of All Souls and the great music into their church that maybe has 200 members and a lot less resources. So what are your thoughts about that? Any advice?
The congregation I came from before coming to All Souls was smaller. It was less than 250 members. But of course, music is a great opportunity to sort of recruit people and get them involved. I mean, the more that people can be there on a regular basis on Sunday, I think the more likely they are to be giving of their time and energy toward other efforts that the church has going on. And I emphasize this in some of the things I spoke about at GA this past year, that there are ways to make music successful without always relying on it being a super gifted classical soloist. I think that sometimes seeing the people who are part of your community up in front and offering their gifts is just as powerful as sharing, this spectacular gift of one very talented musician. So I would emphasize trying to get people to sing together as often as possible. There's something that's very visceral that happens when you are joined in community singing together. And the music from the Vespers service, although we do that only on one Sunday or on one Wednesday a month, the music from that is very accessible, it's simple, it's easy to sing in harmony and sound good. And those resources, I actually just shared them on the UUMN website, some resources that we use for our Vesper services. I think for smaller congregations or smaller choirs, those pieces can be a good jumping off point. I also think pieces like the pieces that we use for our processionals, you know, they're often just three-part or four-part harmony and not as difficult to learn as a big anthem. There can be great success in pulling off smaller victories than always thinking about when can we do the Brahms Requiem, when can we do the Misa Gaia. There are, you know, I think that there, find other ways to highlight the unique talents of some people in your congregation. I mean, that was sort of how we found out about the gifts of the bluegrass band, for example. So, you know, and it could be just simply putting out a call in your order of service. You know, do you have special musical gifts? And that was sort of how we found out about people. I forgot to mention that we have this funk band that is playing in our services, and that was just by chance. Everybody's cracking up. Just by chance, finding out that we had, you know, three trombone players and a bunch of saxophone players. And, you know, we can't use a saxophone on every Sunday morning, but we can do a damn good version of Uptown Funk.
So too.
You, Patrice was asking about crossing theological boundaries and that music can take people places. I know All Souls has been really aware and a leader in the whole realm of cultural misappropriation and really music education. And can you talk some about that, how you do include world music respectfully and how that works, and just talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I think part of what we do, we're always seeking to do better and to know more. And so part of why we invest in the money to bring in informed voices on specific styles of music is so that our congregation can learn and our musicians can learn more. So that especially comes with, you know, we do a lot of music in the gospel, contemporary gospel tradition, in the spiritual tradition, and I think that it's important to have informed voices who are up there either helping the choir or helping lead the choir, so that there's another layer of authenticity. It's not just showboating. This one time we have this gospel soloist with us, we have these people who are members of our congregation, are beloved beloved people who work with our congregation on a regular basis. Again, I think another thing that we really try to emphasize is context. So, for example, when the West African Drumming Ensemble performs, they're often singing in, you know, in native languages of Africa, and we always provide a translation, we provide the context for where the piece came from, we provide the times where it would have been sung, anything that gives people an additional layer of understanding why this works with this particular worship on a given day, I think helps to enhance understanding.
The music you wouldn't do, either culturally or for other reasons?
Huh, interesting. I think I would stay, personally, I feel like if I'm leading something in rehearsal and it feels forced for any reason, I'm very reluctant to continue working on it, to continue programming it. I think, or if it feels like we're really, we're exploiting a particular style rather than trying to embody it with real understanding, that's another place where I don't feel comfortable. But on the other hand, you know, a lot of people think that, and maybe it goes back to, you know, when R&B was sort of forming and it came out of the black church, and people said, well, this is, you know, the devil's music. This is the opposite of gospel. It's this musical tradition that sounds like gospel but has this different kind of lyrical content. You know, there are a lot of people who have sort of questioned or pushed back when we've done pop music in service. They think that that's just the music you should hear on the radio and there's no place for it in worship. And I caution that that's really closing the box on what church music is supposed to be. I think that there's something about what is the voice of the people now, and that's still very relevant to what, you know, to what we need to be sharing as a congregation. So I try to, but again, often making sure that we have lyrics printed and we have a copyright license to do that. Making sure that lyrics are printed, making sure that you're giving the context for why the song was written. All of those things are things that I think we try to give as much information and as true information as we can.
So speaking of pop rock, I recently played just a little piece of One Direction's Drag Me Down.
How'd that go?
Which is really great. I mean, it was only probably about, you know, 30 seconds of it, and then I sang the chorus, you know, basically, nothing's going to drag me down. And I heard so much positive about that. After people they just loved it. You know, it was just like this thing they didn't expect, you know. And for those that don't know, One Direction is a boy band, although I guess they're a young adult band now, of four young men from Britain and Ireland, I think. And they have a, you know, anyway, they're on the Billboard 100 or something.
Their fans refer to them as 1D, actually.
Well, obviously I'm not a... That particular song was really fun. I think I heard it on the radio, and it just somehow clicked with the message that I was going with, you know, that week. And so I think there is an opportunity to bring in some really fun music. And speaking of fun music, I'm hoping Jen might say a little bit about GA and how that's going. For those who don't know, Jen is, I don't know what your official title is, but I know you are the music director for a General Assembly in Columbus, Ohio next year.
Well, I'm leading the music at Ministry Days, so all ministers, I hope that you'll come and sing with us during Ministry Days. And then I'm also leading music at Service of the Living Tradition.
Okay, there we go.
So some of the things I feel really lucky, I've had some great conversations so far already talking with some of the organizers from UUMA and other leaders at GA. It looks like I really advocated that I wanted to bring part of the All Souls experience and format of worship to what happens, especially at Service of the Living Tradition. And so they've been very gracious in helping me to bring some of our musicians and a few of our soloists to GA this year. And I'm hoping that it won't feel like the All Souls show. My hope is that people will see the sort of camaraderie that we have as leaders, as musical leaders, and just trying to share that context and wisdom that we learn from working with these musicians over time, the way they sort of understand certain cues that really heighten, take the music to the next level. And there's a certain chemistry that comes with working with a group of musicians for a long time. And that's part of what I think all of you who've visited All Souls, kind of, you've experienced in one way or another. And so to take that chemistry away and to just try to perform the pieces with a bunch of musicians who don't yet know each other would be sort of a disservice to the style of what we do. So I'm really looking forward to bringing some of what we do. Luckily, many of you know Gordon Kent. He will also be joining us.
That's great.
And so there will be a gravelly Tom Waits voice and a fabulous leader from the keyboard for some things. But I'm hoping that we'll be able to give people a little taste of some of the special music that All Souls brings, and let people know that it's actually maybe more accessible than they would have thought.
I think so. Can I ask one follow-up question? So how are you taking the content of what you've heard about SLT and Ministry Days and translating that into the music? I mean, do you think about the lyrics? Do you think about the energy of the music? Do you think about the overall musicality? I mean, how do you translate that into music to support? And, you know, generally, not just GA, but in general, I'm wondering about that.
Well, I think part of it is I want to give singers and those participating in the service a good experience. And part of that is I want to do music that is accessible to do in the amount of time that we have to make people feel successful. And part of that is also challenging them to not just have printed music in front of them, but to learn some things in the oral tradition, which is the style in which a lot of these pieces were written. To get them to be a little more free in their bodies from time to time. You know, I think that the other goal for me is to get people, you know, we were talking about it, it's that sometimes worship can be a very cerebral experience, and I think to get people out of that space, you know, in a way that feels comfortable, or maybe a little uncomfortable, as the case may be, will be part. That's part of what I'm really looking forward to celebrating this year at GA.
I'm interested in the kind of team aspect of your saying, you know, I'm bringing this person to, because so much of what you're talking about with the music is connectivity, and I wonder about you know, importing one person from a system to replicate. Not that they're, I see amazing things happen at GA where people who haven't met come together, and I suppose also see each other at the Musicians Network meetings and all of that, but like the various GA bands and GA choirs and those temporary things. I mean, can you talk about connection and teamwork and just, you know, your thoughts about, because that's really so central to so much of what you're saying.
Yeah, and I think I hope that, you know, I also have great appreciation for how the music, you know, I got to mentor and shadow Don Milton this year as he led the music this year at GA, and I was amazed at his ability to work so quickly with this band of musicians who were just getting to know each other. I think there's so much merit in and hard work that goes into what happens there. I think part of what I'm hoping to bring this year, and part of the reason why I mentioned a couple of specific guests from All Souls coming, is that, you know, people wonder, how do I start to incorporate this particular style into my worship at my church? Or, you know, it's sort of hard to identify some of those people. But I think that there are a couple of people who just, they have really embodied the spirit of what has kept that music alive at All Souls, and I think their wisdom is priceless in what they can share. But also, I think that I'm hoping they'll speak a little bit to the vulnerability of what that is like. You know, when we do a gospel song, for example, a lot of people, we don't do a lot of things that are printed. You know, I like to have people engaged, and the folder of music feels like a barrier sometimes to people who are to people who are listening from outside the choir. And, you know, oftentimes if things are really magical, we'll keep going. One more repeat, or take the band out. And I think that there's this other level of communication that I want people to witness so that they can see that there's this beauty in kind of cultivating a group of music ministers who learn to work together to create a specific sound, or, you know, they can just start to read each other's cues. There's something really magical that happens when that sort of synergy happens. So that's kind of what I'm hoping to bring or to model, but also to share so that people can realize, oh, it doesn't have to be scary all the time.
We have a question from our audience. Woo! If I may jump in. Question is, Jen, what advice do you have for folks who are tempted to change lyrics they are uncomfortable with for theological reasons, such as some of the songs that appear revised in our gray hymnal?
Oh, what a great question. Thank you for writing
it. Theological discomfort.
Well, first of all, let me say I feel discomfort often at All Souls, and it's because I think it pushes me to learn and to figure out what I really value as important musically, important context-wise. And so discomfort is probably a given if you're working hard at your job. What I have learned, and this may be different for other congregations, as many of you have said, you know, All Souls is very, very open and affirming of a lot of what the music program does, and I've been happy to sort of walk into that. It's been a blessing. I will say, I'll give a specific example, and this may or may not be helpful, but I hope it will be. This past year, the Sunday after the Freddie Gray murder, We did a service highlighting, you know, the events of what had happened in Baltimore, and we chose to do a piece called Ukutula. It's a piece from South Africa that was a piece of the people during the apartheid era, and it was basically saying, Lord, in this time of struggle, grant us peace, grant us redemption, grant us, etc. And the piece also mentioned Jesus. And I thought, in the context of what was going on and the way that I paralleled this piece with the struggle of the people, of African-American people in our country, that it was important to not change the lyrics, because to me it altered the story of what this group of people in South Africa were singing about. And so rather than change the lyrics, we gave the context of where the piece had come from, why we'd chosen it, you know, this kind of paralleling the struggle. And it was one of the few moments of quiet at All Souls. When the piece finished, people were crying, but there was absolute silence other than that. No applause, and sometimes music directors, we know that no reaction is sometimes more special than applause or, you know, anything else. And I realized that for me, that was a moment of success where I took a risk, and by giving the context and an understanding of where the piece came from, was far better than making an adaptation to make others feel comfortable. Sometimes struggle and some of the content that we talk about on Sunday mornings is uncomfortable. And so I challenge us to sort of think about ways that our music can also push those boundaries. Now, that's not always the case, but I think in this specific instance that was something that I felt strongly about, and others did too.
Jen, we just have a few minutes left. Is there anything we haven't asked you that you really wished we would, that you want to talk about?
Well, I think that the only other things I want to talk about is we have started a project which we funded through Faithify, another great program, called the We Believe Project. And part of the We Believe Project is sort of like the This I Believe series on NPR, talking about individual statements of faith and realizing that while we celebrate everyone's individual statement of faith, we can find some common threads that unite us in all of these ideas. And so over a series of Sundays, we've recorded, you know, almost 200 personal testimonials, just one-line statements of faith, and finding ways to sort of weave them together and then tie them to a piece of music. So this is a project that we're just starting to roll out, and it's really exciting. But we're also working on a way for smaller churches, or, you know, any size church, to replicate the model, because I think the idea that, even realizing that All Souls is just one church, but we may have other congregations that feel very similarly about some specific issues, that interconnectedness beyond just our individual churches is also, I think, really important. And so hopefully
that people can find out more about the We
Believe. Yeah, we're working on a website right now, but right at the end of today's podcast or sharing of the view, we have some links to, we have our first video up and live. So I hope that people will check it out, and if they have questions or find a way to get involved, I would be happy to talk and collaborate. Collaboration is one of my favorite parts of my job.
I bet CLF would be interested in that, just for starters. So yeah, that's great. That's fabulous. Well, last words from anyone else?
Hank? Jen,
I just want to say, like, how important music is, and having a diversity of music helps us to, in some ways, really understand and experience the different theologies and different beliefs that we have, and sort of the great diversity of what it is that Unitarian Universalism is. And so, you know, it's great when that works. That's great. It makes me very happy and a little jealous. Okay, a lot jealous. Okay, a lot jealous. Okay.
Can I tell a quick musical anecdote? I'm sorry, Patrice, I stepped over you.
I was just going to say, Hank, I'll tag team on that you know, I'm also a little bit jealous of All Souls. And I also just want to offer my blessings, Jen, to you and Rob, your Rob, on a wonderful wonderful life together.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Bob.
I was going to tell a quick story about a time I had just gotten back from Afghanistan, and my marriage was falling apart, and I went to Vespers, and at some point, you know, the way Vespers works is there's a point in the service where you can move to tables where there are candles and meditate in whatever tradition you practice. And I was sitting there weeping, and I looked over, and Reverend Rob Hardies was looking at me, and he had this look on his face of total shock, and you know, he was sort of like, and I knew, that's when I realized like how, when you're freaking out Rob Hardies with my own reaction, I knew I was really deep in a place, so, but it was beautiful, it was really wonderful. So thank you for your ministry.
And Jen, your energy is just so contagious. I mean, you can just see how much you love it, and you probably use the word blessing 100 times, and you've been a real blessing to us, so thank you very much. Next week, we'll be talking, about the Church of the Larger Fellowship and some of our cool stuff. So come back, and thanks again to our special guest, Jen Heyman. We will be posting the link to that, we believe, in the CLF Facebook page, so come and get it, and see you all next time.
This has been a podcast of The View, brought to you by the Church of the Larger Fellowship. To find out more about the CLF, visit questformeaning.org.